Call meeting to order. Go ahead and let's go around and do a roll call for the minutes. Let's start.
Jonathan Madalas. The Franklin County Administrator. Kim Patrick.
Kevin Crowley.
Chad Michael, Kenworth Fire Department.
Brendan Cable, Paul Smith, over Beth County.
BJ Olson.
Carla Frock, Franklin Health District.
Becky Gross, Franklin County.
Michelle Gerber, Benton Franklin Recovery Coalition.
Jamie Anarola.
Joel Chavez.
Matt Clark, Benton County Sheriff's Office, Susan Dahl, Sheriff Prosper.
Did we miss?
I'm Judge Jim Bell, District Court alternate to Ryan Washburn. Benton County Therapeutics.
Thank you. So we have the approval for the minutes, last meeting, those were sent out, they're all available online. Any updates or changes? Those in favor approving the minutes, say aye.
Actually, on page three, there was, I did catch one thing on B, stated that when we were talking about the RFP that was in development, that I've made a suggestion not doing any other ancillary duties, that should actually be that they would be available to do other ancillary duties.
Okay.
Yeah, so with that correction happened.
The noted corrections. But that, okay. Any other corrections? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Like to add some items to the agenda for today. We have a presentation that is prepared for the crisis field responders. And then I think I'm going to wait on this second one. And then we need to do election of officers today. It's been 1 year, so I will put that at the end of our discussion items. So be thinking about who you would like to nominate. And, you know, since people aren't here today. I'm not going to say that, but fill in with whatever you think. Okay. Open up to public comment. Anybody from the public would like to address the committee? It's your opportunity to do so. We will also have an opportunity for public comment after discussion items. All right. No comment. Then I am going to move to Sobering Center proposal presentations. Lords, are you here and ready to do the presentation? All right. Thank you.
First.
Yeah.
Listen, I can move over.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
My name is Natalie. I am the Senior Director of Behavioral Health at Lord Counseling Center. How do you feel?
My name is Mauricio Gomez, and I'm the Federal Community Outreach and Outpatient Services.
Okay.
Low schools in the city.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here and present on our proposal and what we would like to, you know, do to serve our community. And so we're here to present on a Stillbirth Center that we would like to establish either in Franklin County, Benton County. You know, we're open to wherever, you know, we need to open up, and we're open to that. So you guys have up front of you just some handouts on what we're looking at and what we're thinking of doing. And so we're proposing to operate a 20-bed Stillbirth Center that's, you know, located, like I said, centrally, you know, Benton, Franklin County. And, you know, we're looking at a Stillbirth Center because we feel like it's a cost-effective alternative, you know, option to serve the community. You know, we've heard from law enforcement that there's always a need for a location to be able to take, you know, some folks in the community that are either intoxicated, not necessarily needing to talk, but maybe just some sobering services. So we figured that this would be a good opportunity for us to serve our community and provide that service line and help.
You know, and after we in the communication with King County, with the Pioneer Center, they have one sobering center there. They changed just the name to a diversion center. And they are able to provide us information about what is the medical criteria for that, what is the day shift duties, night shift duties, what is the staff has to check on the client, and also what is the, when they have to discharge somebody, they have a criteria. That is something that we can, you know, show you guys and work together to see what is the best option for the clients in the community, because it's different population there and different needs here. So that's one of the main things that they was able to share with us. What is the need about having a recliners or having just mattresses on the floor? And one of the things that I agree with them about having only the mattress on the floor is because the recliners can be a difficult thing for the for staffing due to the fact that when we have clients, they are IV user, they put the needles next in the middle of the recliners. When you start patching it up, they get popped, and this is several locations, not just one. So they decide to remove the recliners in King County. And we are talking about a capacity of 60 clients there. Right now, they are 50% capacity due to COVID and other things. But they are saying there is something that is almost full at night shift. Those are the folks.
So yeah, definitely a safety concern, you know, to have responders there, to have beds. It's also a safety concern because if somebody's intoxicated, it could fall over. And so, you know, their recommendation was to have mattresses, which would be safer. And so that's what they're doing. So that's what we were looking at modeling it after that. In the next few pages, we're just sharing a little bit more information on the Stillbirth Center and, you know, the hours of operation. So it would be a 24/7 location where, you know, we would operate with staffing. And for a sobering center, the length of stay would be between 4 hours to just under 23 hours. So they wouldn't, you know, remain there for 24 hours or overnight. You know, so that's the requirement for a sobering center. It would be an unlocked facility. It would be, you know, a voluntary placement, of course. So we would, you know, also want to create it as low barrier as possible, but we also want to save and make sure that, you know, who will get into our care, that we are able to provide good care for them, quality care, and not put anybody at risk. You know, we feel that, hey, they're outside of our scope, then, you know, we'll look at other options that once they're out of that danger zone, maybe they can come over and change the sober up. So those are some options there. So the primary goal would be to, you know, help have the client be in a safe place as they sober up and really connect them to services. It wouldn't just be like, all right, you're done, you know, you're out of here. It would really, you know, try to connect them with services. Not everybody, you know, is ready to make change. You know, just from our experience in working in a detox facility, we always saw that, you know, where it was, you know, just sober up a little bit, they would stay a full day or the time they really needed to withdraw. You know, because withdrawals are uncomfortable. And a lot of the times it would just leave. And so we definitely want to connect them with services or to provide something so they could follow up, or we would have peer support so they can, you know, follow up with them and just kind of build that rapport. And maybe at some point, if they're ready, we can engage them to service. They wouldn't just be a, let's sober you up and then you're on your way kind of thing. We want to be able to make some connection there. So the next one is licensing. The Department of Health license type, it would really be a branch type license. So we've done some research with DOH, reached out to them. This is the licensing that they're recommending. So basically, it would be a branch type license off of the behavioral health agencies license that we currently have as a town pay center. So that's what we would apply for to be able to operate this facility. Why is that the best option? It doesn't require a whole lot, you know, like if we were to do a residential treatment facility license, that would be, you know, a lot more time to be able to open this up. This one is, tends to be less time consuming for the service that we're trying to offer, which require.
Yeah, and also the license for residential treatment facility, they have specifically required this about facility capacity rooms. It's so many things that we have to meet before we can get open that. And this is just like a branch site, it's visiting a patient services. That less than 2 to 3 hours, so today is feasible. It's fast to open it, no waiting to all the construction requirements. They're in place right now.
So the next slide, you want to talk about?
Yeah, the staffing model that we have recommending for the 24/7 is basically having a mental health professional and it's a social use a professional as a supervisor. He's basically supervising the facility, at least like 5 hours a week. And it's basically, it's going to be under Nelly. Nelly's our licensed social is professional. And we have also thinking about having field recovery specialists because they make better connection with clients because they understand the disease. It's not just to have somebody there and make, they don't want to work with them because somebody is coming off or alcohol or benzos or opiates. Somebody who has lived experience, it's has better connection and understand the take time. It's not just, it's something that more you can make a change. Somebody who knows how to be patient because it was in that situation. We also we are recommending having a withdrawal management aides or basic mental health counselor or mental health aides, and they can work with them to work together as a team. So we are proposing like 12-hour shifts. It's going to be a 0.9 FTEs. Basically, the staff's going to work 3 days a week, 36 hours, and they can have 4 days off. My experience working in detox and working 8 hours a week for 5 days is something that you can burn out really easy. You don't like it because this is, in my experience, and I can say detox, I was in a place in detox in Mexico and detox here, it's exactly the same problem. When you don't have the training and you don't have the experience, you stay with some, you know the disease, the watch somebody with drug opiates or alcohol, you can be persuaded because you think people are gonna die or people can become a little agitated. So you need to be able to have some time for yourself, self-care. That's important in this kind of field. And then next year, we are thinking the same thing, having peer recovery specialists and withdrawal management aides. In the back is the staffing. Basically, we want to have only 2 staff members in the facility, and having Friday on Friday, we can add their staff just for one day, because we know Friday sometimes is when the issues in my experience when I was people is when more clients.
And for this one, you know, we're really considering maybe adding them a third staff member. You know, the location that we envisioned, that we have in mind initially, is the location on Margaret Street, that's right between the 122 room in Lord's Medical Center and the jail. And if we ever needed to, you know, walk somebody over to it, you know, we want to make sure that we're stacking up to where we can safely, you know, the facility and walk somebody over there. So we're, you know, kind of looking, relooking at our staffing plan here, but.
Yeah, and also the sober center is going to be located in the old KGH hospital. We got the fire department next to there, so just collaboration between the fire department and the sober center. We have to worry about with clients there and see they need to be transferred to other place or not. Depends on the severity of the withdrawal symptoms.
So the next thing is how the proposal supplements and interfaces with current conditions of the care in the region. You know, we want to be very collaborative. We want to continue to, you know, provide services in collaboration with other community partners. It's not something that can be done alone. You know, definitely needing that collaboration and you know, connecting folks to services out in the community so that you can be successful, so that you really, you know, move towards a journey of recovery and really the ultimate goal, and make sure that they have that stability and the quality of life. If that's what, you know, what's needed. So in the next page, we're looking at, you know, we just listed a few that came to mind of programs that, you know, we would partner with and that we currently already partner with, but it's not limited to just this list. And so these are all, you know, established community agencies.
And the idea is to have a open door for other providers. It's like we have a COVID Navigator program, they can come and meet with the clients. And we have neuro ministry, we can go and meet with the clients. So it's just, it's a collaboration. It's not just if we can run the facility, not just growth, because at the end it has to be a community effort to be able to have enough folks.
So one of the other things, the potential issue that may arise from this service being added into the community or to the region without any services or other services being available. You know, one of the things that we see is sometimes the lack of funding available to those folks that are uninsured or underinsured. So there is a crisis of outpatient unit in the area, and, you know, Transitions is one of them. At Lord's Company Center, and that's one of the things that we definitely see. And, you know, it's a population that's needing the services, but it's underserved because their insurance sometimes operate or whatever the case may be. So that lack of funding, you know, definitely we can see that would be a barrier. If we have somebody coming into the sobering center that, you know, falls under that category, then, you know, how do we assist them, because they're not, you know, as acute to, let's say, go to a psych hospital or the ED, but really need just some of that stabilization. So that's kind of one of the areas that we think would be a barrier. The other one, you know, if someone is intoxicated and needing a higher level of withdrawal management, we all know that doesn't exist here in the area, right? So then that would fall, you know, back to the ED. And so we think that that's also, you know, a barrier that we definitely foresee happening. So needing a medical detox or another education recovery facility, if needed inpatient, then, you know,
yeah, in this situation where somebody is like going to the sobering center, you know, having withdrawal symptoms, and the withdrawal symptoms need a high level of care, they have also the mental health component, we can probably transfer to the psych hospital at Lord's or another psych hospital where they have a nurse 24/7, then they can do like a count or they can see what program goes to the facility. That is something that is needed here. And like the one, the they will have funding available for uninsured or underinsured population, is something that we can figure it out if the 1% tax can cover that cost for the crisis stabilization piece. And it's something that's available for the community. But we used to have that before, but when the LCO in 2008 came in, everything separated, so that population get covered for crisis stabilization also the areas. Because the private insurance doesn't cover that, it's not medical necessity. Or it's just the medical one, the health care is not immune.
Hey guys, I just wanted to let everybody know I've got to jump off to my next meeting, but we are very supportive of Lord's setting this up in Pasco. So I've worked with Mauricio, we've worked with Sheriff Raymond. So I know Sheriff Raymond is very supportive of having this center in Pasco. So I just wanted to get that out there before, you know, I left. I've heard through the grapevine there might be some pushback from Pasco police that may not necessarily want it. So I haven't confirmed that, but I know on our side, we've been supportive of the endeavor. So, you know, perhaps there's more conversation that needs to be had. But anyhow, I just wanted to leave the group with that.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thanks guys. Have a good day.
All right, and that is all we have to do.
Any other questions?
You, Mr. Chair, a couple comments and questions. I think one of the, maybe a comment first is, as we kind of chart down this course, I think one of the things that we're going to need to think about is duplication of services. So do we have a center over in Pasco? Do we have a center over in Kennewick? Do we need that? The more duplication we have, the greater the cost. And we're going to have to think about that. There's only so much money available for the services. So I don't know what the right answer to that is. Probably a question maybe the commissioners will need to wrestle with, but I think that needs to be something that needs to be thought through. Questions, I didn't see medical screening in here. So I didn't, unless I missed it, is there a person there that would be able to evaluate medically to see if somebody is medically able to be at the facility?
So we do have a medical screening that we would follow and move forward with our medical director on that.
Okay. We have also the paperwork from the King County, and we know that. My background is that I used to work in a detox facility in Pasco for 7 years.
I was a supervisor for the detox facility that
we used to work with.
Yep.
So we know the we need to check vital signs. We need to be sure they're in a safe range before that. We need to screen for withdrawal management, without symptoms or DTs. So we know that somebody who is has a potential potential seizure or something, or somebody who's been coming up for benzodiazepines or some kind. We have to be sure they are not gonna in the proper level of care.
And then just one more comment. When we think about transport to hospitals, I don't know if you can, if the fire department can bill if we transport from your facility to a hospital. So that would be something you probably want to check out. Mm-hmm. There's that piece. And the other part is just the capacity. So yep. We have to look at another alternative method to get them from the facility to the hospital. It would probably be something that we would need to be through.
Oh, yeah. It's something that we know that sometimes the proximity of the hospital pool can be a challenge also. But if it's something that we had in mind, it means different collaboration between agencies. Right, in example, the Corps Navigator, they also have two transport patients. But we figured out something that is more, and the more we are thinking is going to be more things coming out late. It's a collaboration.
Oh, and I have a few questions.
Go ahead.
What do you envision your ability to take folks with co-occurring disorders, say if they're suicidal, lower level, would they stay there? Would they be transitioned to transitions, or would they go to the inpatient unit?
Well, you know what, my experience doing this detox is most of it, example, guys coming up or alcohol. Most of the time, most of the time, it's going to say suicidal, they need some place to sleep. So that's why we had to have a really big training with the staff. Monitor the clients. That's when it's going to be an open space. It has to be no barriers between beds, because you can see the clients sleeping. If they need criteria to go to different level of care, we have to contract services or figure out what to do there. But the idea is to have it there and watching them.
Okay, and that makes sense. And that's been my experience as well. Somebody's intoxicated, suicidal, but willing to keep themselves safe in a
supportive environment, and then when they sober up, they're okay and just want help, so. Medications, verifications of medications, if somebody comes in with a bunch of pill bottles, do you have an ability to verify they are what they say in the pill bottle? Do you have the ability to administer or at least cue people like you did at some acute social detox? Again, I'm assuming you don't prescribe any medications, but.
We're not prescribers, but definitely that is something that we will be working with our pharmacy, at the medical center, and seeing what options we have, what we can do, what we can provide, that would be like standing orders over the counter medication.
You know, so we, it's something that we have to promote, Jen, the UH allow us to do that, because that's another requirement, like, that's more like our nature, but in facility, that's a different level of, but, yeah, it's something that we have to figure it out.
And the question around is, you've talked about taking people to emergency department, obviously, we don't have a subacute social detox or any other level of detox, so I'm curious if they go to the detox and they're given Valium or something to help with their withdrawals, if the sobering center can accept them back at that point and then discharge in the supportive services, or if that's beyond your scope, because it would technically be withdrawal management services and not necessarily sobering services.
Well, I think that's where we would need to really, you know, look at the criteria before they come in to see what the withdrawal management risk is. So if, you know, let's say we have somebody that's been drinking, you know, for, you know, every day, they're drinking 12 beers a day, you know, and they've been drinking for a long period of time throughout their life, obviously, then that's not going to be a good fit, right? Because we would not be able to manage them safely, and that would be a disservice to that person.
Yeah, if somebody has the corporate disorder, we can connect them to the inpatient unit, because they can do the CWA protocol, they can do the academic street, leave you, they can do all this, those 24/7, something like that.
So if they leave the recovery center, let's say they go to the emergency room, right? And then at that point, they're saying, hey, we're going to put this person on CWA protocol, because they're too high risk, they're withdrawing. May not be able to bring them back, but we look for alternatives to transfer them over to the inpatient unit at Lord's, where, you know, they would probably be able to make that happen. If they still, you know, if they meet that full current criteria.
Or in collaboration with comprehensive, yeah, they have the facility there, and figure it out, we can do transportation back there. So that's not just going to be a collaboration in the region, it's going to be outside.
Okay, and I know you mentioned medical screening. Are you guys going to be able to do vitals? Because obviously, people aren't always honest about how much they drank, so you can do some basic vitals during their stay there to make sure that they don't need a higher level of care.
Yeah.
I have two more quick questions, then I promise I'll be quiet. Is there any limits to BAL, or is that kind of case by case, not arbitrarily set at, if they're above a 300 BAL, then they can't come, they'd have to go to the emergency department first, or is it?
We have to set some limits, because the higher the BAL, then the higher the risk.
Right.
So they have to.
It's a state of member, King County, the BAL, the alcohol level is below 400. So it's something that we use when detox was here, is below 300, the 300 below. So it's something that, obviously, somebody with high temperature, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, and then final question. I know you mentioned 20 beds, which is awesome. Can you talk about how you came up with that number, and then maybe enlighten the committee on, because I know, you know, when we had a subacute social detox that stays averaged 3+ days, I think the average census was 3 or 4. Can you talk a little bit about how you came up with the number of 20, and then maybe what the barriers were previously that prevented our subacute social detox from having, I think the capacity was 12, correct?
The one of the main barriers that we had before was the insurance, the reimbursement first, and also when you submit the claim to the insurance, they say it's not medical necessity. Even the person who is reviewing the paperwork, they are not seeing the client, right? And that's the main thing. When detox was open, somebody who has Medicaid as well. So all the people that has private insurance or no insurance, they're complex. The difference here is they might be open for everybody. So that's the why we think that means 20 bed capacity is feasible, because when we went in conversation with King County, they had EMTs in the facility in training. So they are a 15 to 1 ratio. If we say we had a peer counselor and we are age 10 is my condition. Whatever is needed to serve us alone for patients, getting as well. So we know it's something that when you have the right person, it would be the clients we respect and dignity. It's easy to work with them.
Thank you.
The only question I have is kind of a conversation about location. And we are still waiting to see long-term and what our plan is for the Kennewick campus. Do you see barriers if we were establishing services early on in Pasco to potentially relocate services later in the contract once the campus gets set up?
Well, it would be a challenge. I would say, you know, it's challenging to establish one place and then, you know, have it ready, have it set up, and then, you know, 2 years down the road, having to lift that up and move it over. You know, it's not ideal. You know, I'm not saying that it's out of the question. You know, I think there is definitely a need across the board to duplicate. You know, we have more than one agency in the area that provides counseling, and, you know, there's always long waits. You know, there's always duplicate services in your community, and that doesn't really seem to be an issue, right? And I think that if we were to duplicate, I don't think that there would be a lack of, you know, services for us to offer. It's sometimes, you know, it would be more manageable for Pasco PD to just go right there, or for Kennewick to have one in their area or whatnot. I'll tell you that, you know, in transitions, when we've had jail diversion there, it's been a barrier when Pasco PD would transport there, and then that person, you know, that was placed there was not following through with the jail diversion requirements, and then we would have to be holding that person, you know, because Pasco PD couldn't, you know, get there on time, and Richmond PD wouldn't pick them up, you know, because of their agreement or work. You can always, there's always issues that come up or barriers that are there, but I think just collaboratively would be nice. Our goal is to serve them, you know, and that's our intention, to be collaborative with them.
So is there a specific reason you'd want PD or EMS to transport these clients versus a part of your staff if you include a driver in a Suburban to do that? I'm assuming that using the resources for PD or EMS, is that the right resource to be used to transporting people if there's no real necessity for that?
At the Suburban Center, is that what you're referring to? We wouldn't. I mean, not unless it's an obvious medical necessity where we're like, hey, we have to call 911, then that would be the case.
Sure.
If that's not the case, so if that's what we're saying, if we were to locate it where, you know, we're thinking of in Pasco, which is walking distance to the ED, then we would add a third person to that shift. So in case somebody in security, of course, if we needed to walk them over, if they were ambulatory, then we would be able to do so without having to call. That's kind of like what we can do.
In my experience also in detox, when I was in the Belfort and Plankton Recovery Center, we had a car there. We had a car that we could provide transportation for the medical school. Obviously, it can be added because for that, it's going to be there with that. But it can save a lot of money as well for the medical departments, for the emergency.
So do you see most people that go to these sobering centers, do they need to go to using an EDE, or just like that? The other like recovery side, get more resources.
You know, based on my experience, when we had our detox facility, it was very, very rare that we would have somebody that really needed that higher level of care for medical. And in fact, when Joel was at the behavioral health, now the ASO, we would talk about, you know, potentially doing sobering services. Yes, we did. We did have some folks that would come in. And, you know, like I said, they would stay just a few hours, and then they would leave, you know, but they were feeling a little better, and they would head out, and they would come back, and, you know, it's just kind of like a revolving door sometimes. But, you know, it was very rare we would have somebody that were like, hey, we need to call 911. It was, Not at all. And if we ever needed somebody, at that time when Lawrence had it, we didn't have that vehicle that Bobby was just talking about. But we would, we had an agreement with like Rat Cab, and Rat Cab would come and pick them up and transfer them to the ED. And then if they were stable enough to come back, then pick them back and, you know, continue the service.
Right. So that'd just be one of the things I look at versus if you have them on the same campus, if the majority of patients or clients need to go to the resource base, having that on the same campus. So that can be a little more streamlined process versus in past with them moving, you know, most of our clients will go to another center. That bridge of the expense or using other resources.
What is it? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Lisa, you mentioned having a discussion with King County, and they recently changed their name from Solaris Center to Diversion Center. Is there, so changing it to Diversion Center, is that, is it still just like Solaris Service, or they just change it to Diversion Center, or are they all taking on all times?
My understanding after the conversation, they just changed the name of the facility, that's it. Can I invest more for the community?
It's clarifying, it's clearer.
You say Solaris Center, I was gonna be, two community members, or I don't want to name it, you said diverse, you said that, they don't know what it is.
Stigmatizing.
I'll say.
And what about funding? What kind of funding do they use for the diversion center?
100% the county funds them.
And other organizations, yes.
So I'm thinking that the use near Ventnor Ranch County is less than in King County. So are you looking at a, like the per diem rates, whatever that is still charged for that, or is that capacity rate for all of the beds that we have, regardless of their full or not?
Well, to really, to be honest, and to make this feasible, and to really have this program be available year round, you know, having it funded 100% by this tax money is really what's more ideal. And, you know, as a, you know, lump sum or an invoice type, you know, per month or whatnot, to cover the operating costs. Otherwise, we'll be right back to that situation we're currently in with no detox, no staffing. And then, you know, again, just having that need in our community.
The thing there, detox center, it was for one who like Unica and later for Lawrence. There was, the community is growing faster than services. I think the funding count is growing so fast, and I don't remember how, 30% or something. And Benton County is growing the same. At the time, that we know we have more people needing service. And I saw the community know there's some place where they can just take patients that like family members, or it can be used a lot. It's the community is growing faster than the week, they think.
So, my last question, sorry, Michelle, if you were to be funded and you went with the Margaret location, what's your, well,
well, as soon as, you know, the Department of Health gave us licensing and just ensuring that we have everything in place. So, you know, we're looking at maybe four months, sorry.
It depends also on the fire departments, where they meet the requirements for safety. You know, so it's something that we don't know, but they have to be inspections and say, yeah, this is it's right or not, it's better the other location. But it says something that is both just working with the community and see, and start looking for the right people to work with. I know, in fact, for peer specialists, I know we can have peer specialists here pretty soon. I got a position right now in California for one. It's just to find the right player. And we are like really, the people that we have right now, Lords, they know so many people that they are referring more candidates to ourselves. We don't have, sometimes the position is already posted, and we had like three or four good candidates for this post. So just working together.
I had a question about the use of the term low barrier, because that can mean different things. What does it mean?
To to, you know, not have so many different things that are blocking the service, you know, for the patients to come in. So one of the things that we were, you know, reporting, we funded 100% by the county, because that, one of the biggest barriers is, you know, payment, right? And, you know, having to, oh, we have to verify insurance, we have to do this, we have to do that. That is a barrier, that is probably one of the biggest barriers. And if, you know, we had this funding, or we know that, hey, this person is going to come in, we're going to provide the service, that is one less thing for us to do. That's what takes the longest. Sometimes, let's say provider one is down for days, you know, and then they won't be able to verify that, and so we just want to make sure that, you know, by doing that, that, you know, we can serve anybody that comes in and have that. And so really just trying to facilitate it to not have such a long wait of like, hey, yep, we can take them in, you know, let's just do the screening, make sure that they're, you know, well enough for us to be able to manage them in a safe environment and safely do that. So that will work out.
And also the law barriers also, how long, you know, that if the ambulance or the police department is coming with a client, to try to minimize the paperwork, try to be sure that the officer or the ambulance can leave in less than 10 minutes. That's one of the things. The current paperwork that we have is really for registration and things, just on the pages, and basically our demographics, and a few things that we have in the basic screening, and the client can be there right away. That's the main.
Okay, I had one other question, that was about location. Have you explored any, well, first of all, do you have any room in LCC? And also, have you explored any location here?
We have no space at us.
How about any in the, you know, lower main part of Richland, you're pretending, other possible location?
For a service like this, not necessarily in any place ideal like downtown, which I would say. You know, we looked at Margaret Street, because of the location, the radius of the, you know, emergency room, jail, and it's a campus that Lourdes already has, and it's available. So just, you know, screw things up, we figured that this would be a good location, right? You already have that available location. But we're open to any other suggestions, I mean, any other areas that has been looked at.
And I think the research can be, that area can be pretty good idea, you know, but we have to go and check what is happening in the community once there. Because I know it really is more, it's specific for what kind of services they want, it's not just. Yeah, it's like, then it says, it's whatever is the best, whatever, you know, the you guys decide, you know, the cost, the KG hospital is the best option available, this part of the building. Or the emergency room, I don't know, it's something that can be open.
All right, thank you. We do have another presentation, so I want to move on to the next one. Thank you guys for sharing with us, and we will let you know. And so we have United Family Center presentation. Anyone? Do not see them. All right, I guess you're up, Chad.
Okay. Well, thanks for giving us a little time on the agenda. This is the behavioral health field responder. Not going to be nearly entertaining as much as Ryan's was last week, but I think we did some good work. So let me hand these hard copies out. I don't have an electronic version to share with you, but hopefully the hard copy works. What we did was we took some samples from, I think one of them was outside of Billings, and there was another one from Arizona. We kind of merged those. And then in our subgroup, we did a fair bit of work. Actually had a lot of reformatting. The data analyst that works in our shop, I'm surprised she'll talk to me anymore after this week, because she had to rewrite most of this, was not in a manner that was easily formatted. So we also got some boilerplate language from Matt at the county that they use when they put out RFPs. So kind of merged all those things together. Just want to do a walkthrough real quick. with you. We don't have to go through every page, but we'll hit some of the highlights. I think one of the big things, and I was hoping Matt was actually going to be here today, is Matt's the point of contact on this. We wrote it where it would be both Benton and Franklin counties kind of together. That was our view of that, not making an arbitrary decision, but that would be our hope, that it would be a shared resource between the two counties. We can change that if that's not the intent, but that's how the document's written. So when you see the yellow highlights, that's because we inserted that in there with that mindset. If you flip over to page one, Matt, that's some of the boilerplate language at the top there that the county puts in as far as when they put out RFPs. If we go down to the purpose and invitation, you read down through there, Benton County seeking proposals for organizations that have the ability to provide a field crisis responder team that will serve both Benton and Franklin counties. The purpose of the field responder team is to provide assistance and relief to first responders, including law enforcement agencies, fire departments, and emergency medical providers for emergency and non-emergency requests related to behavioral health, alcohol, and substance abuse issues. The team may respond in coordination with emergency response agencies, the appropriate substance use or behavioral health resource in place of these agencies, depending on the need, or in place of these agencies, depending on the needs of the individual involved and the safety considerations for the field crisis responder team. So still, as we operationalize this, we get it up and running, there's going to need to be a lot of work that's going to need to happen, probably in coordination with our medical program director, Dr. Hodges, that takes care of Franklin and Benton County, with our dispatch team on getting this up and running. And then a little bit more information there that talks about how it operates. Qualifications, anticipated number of individuals serving in these roles will include 3 employees trained as peer counselors, and then 3 behavioral health professionals. Education, we're looking for a minimum of bachelor's degree is required, and then a master's degree would be their preferred education level. Again, this is some boilerplate language that we had that we put in for C all the way down through D. Won't bore you with that, but if you want to take this home, look at it, let us know if you think we missed anything.
Quick question back to education. So you're looking, the way I read this is that you're asking that the behavioral health professionals and the peer counselors have the same level of minimum education.
No, yeah, no, they don't need to. And if we need to make that distinction, then we can, happy to do that. And then the required content, what we need them to submit, anybody that's interested, would be a cover letter, their qualifications, and the anticipated costs. And we broke all that out. So I would invite all of you to take a look through that. We think we captured everything, but if you think we missed something, let us know. We're happy to put that in there. Comprehensive plan with onboarding and training requirements. We need to know what that looks like. So there should be a fair bit of things that they're going to need to go through. And again, we try to identify all the things that we think should be included in that, but some of you may have other ideas and things that you think that we might have missed. I draw your attention to page 6 on scope of work. I'm looking down at number 5. It says below is a general outline of the anticipated scope of work. However, the final scope of work will be negotiated with a successful provider. So this was just our suitable providers may have some, I'm sure we'll have some ideas of their own. Primary responsibility of the field crisis responder team includes the support and service coordination necessary to provide integrated crisis response and stabilization interventions with a focus on ensuring the individual in need of services is directed to the most appropriate treatment for the issues they are experiencing. The team must be available Monday through Sunday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 365 days a year. The team is expected to provide mental health crisis intervention services, conduct an evaluation of the individual to determine the most appropriate care for the issue or issues the person is dealing with, be trained in the techniques used to de-escalate an individual involved in crisis, and have the knowledge, skills, and capabilities required to affect symptom reduction, harm reduction, and to help safety transition persons experiencing issues in the field to the appropriate treatment and care provider. The team will also assist with developing plans to meet the ongoing needs of the person having the mental health crisis. And then you can see a breakout of the service reporting requirements, try to identify a number of the things that we would want them to report out on, to take a look at how valuable is the service in our community. We think we captured most of the things, but again, we'd invite you, if you think we missed something, I would just ask you to think about 2 things. One, how easy is the data going to be to collect if there's something that you think we should get? And then see, what are we going to do with that information? There's a whole bunch of things that we could put in here, but if we're not going to do anything with it, then there's really no point in burdening people trying to collect that information. Put some additional information in there about the objective of the team, ancillary duties. We don't anticipate that the team is going to be busy all the time. So if you remember when we very first started this conversation, we just said they'll just be focused on this. we've really kind of changed our mindset now to think they'll have some capacity to help. Eventually, we would envision that they probably would work out of the facility, and then they would be able to help out with some other collateral duties there at the facility. It would make sense to us. The RFP evaluation and selection process, the thoroughness of their proposal would be 20 points. Cover letters, 10 points. Provider qualifications is 40 points. And then we would envision them in for an interview process, and that would be 30 points. So that's what that would look like. And then the rest of this is all boilerplate information that comes from the county. That's a requirement, and I won't go through that with insurance requirements and all of that. So no action necessarily, Mr. Chair, that's needed on this today, other than inviting everybody to pick this back, review it, and red pen it if you think that we made any errors that we need to make changes on.
So the goal of this would be to put out a cluster next.
Yeah, that would be if we could get comments back by the next committee meeting. Actually, before it would be really helpful so that we could incorporate those changes, and then I could bring more of a final draft back to this group to see if we could get approval to get that out.
And they should send those comments to you?
If you want to send them directly to me, it would be great. Yeah. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody might have about the RFP or the work that was done. Really big appreciation to Kim. A lot of good comments as we went through this, kind of looking through the lens of dispatch and some things we want to think about there. Cindy, the whole team, everybody was really involved with this. A lot of good discussion.
Yeah, first glance, this is excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. I take no credit for the formatting. That's Julie. So
she did a good job.
Any other questions or comments?
So our thought then is a non-comprehensive agency could win this RFP, but then our expectation is that they would be on their downtime, that they would work at the recovery center under comprehensive's roof.
Correct.
Is that an issue?
You probably have to talk to comprehensive about that, but that would be our view, that they would have some capacity and that they would be helping out there in the facility.
Yeah, you could do an interlocal, or it's not an interlocal, but it's two entities, but an agreement.
An agreement, after, yeah. Yeah, whatever that looks like.
Other questions, comments?
My only other thought is, do we have an intended budget for this project in and of itself?
I think, yeah, that's a great question. I
we don't.
That would like an idea thing. Or
with all of these things, I think we're building the airplane as we're flying it.
Yeah.
I think realistically, we're looking for the person or groups that are going to be doing the lesser proposals to put together a preliminary budget. And then I think based on that, making recommendations to the commissioners about that.
Correct.
Have you stated that in here that they should propose a budget?
And when I say building the airplane, that's a joke, obviously, but that's the intent of the RFP, was that they would sharpen their pencil, they would put forth, there's all the things that we're recommending in response to the RFP, and then they would put in what their proposed budget would be, their deal. And recognizing that it's probably going to be anticipated, it might not be exactly, but we would certainly use that as a piece to figure out whether or not that would be the provider that would be selected.
All of C, category C on page 5 talks about that.
I'd entertain a discussion about election of officers. We, by our bylaws, need to elect officers at this meeting. We have a number of regulars out today. Anyway, I'd entertain a conversation discussion about that.
Mr. Chair, maybe I might offer, it might be good for a refresher of who is serving in what positions. I don't even know. It's been long enough that I don't remember, other than you, who else is in positions.
Yes, we have, hold on a second. I think we have 3 officer positions. Let's see. I'll double check that to make sure. But the busiest one is obviously the chairperson. So we have myself as the chairperson. Then we have Jason as vice chair and Aaron, who's not here today, I don't believe, is secretary. I don't know that there's a whole lot of work for the secretary. Those are the three positions.
Thank you.
And the recommendation according to our bylaws is that officers serve for 1 year and then give the opportunity for other committee members to serve as officers. But there is no limit to the number of terms that a member can serve.
Would you like to continue?
Yeah, that's what.
This rogue, don't fix it. Comes to mind.
I would be open to anyone else that wanted to, but I am not against serving a second term.
I'll make a motion that you do a second term as the chair.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any conversation for the chair position? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I don't have to split the vote on that one. With vice chairman, I did not have the opportunity to talk to Jason before to see if he wanted to serve a second term.
I don't know Jason's thoughts. I know he's pretty busy, but he never expressed to me that he didn't want to stay as vice chair. So I can't speak for him right now saying, yeah, do it.
Right.
That sounded pretty positive, though.
Make a motion.
Didn't say he wouldn't, so if he had something to say as when he wanted to probably.
Yeah.
So I don't think he even realized that the position was up for nomination.
Yeah, I didn't look, I didn't know to realize until I looked at the bylaws today. I was like, it's coming up, but I didn't realize it was this.
Because I'm pretty sure Jason would have told, he would have been here if he knew.
Sure.
So I don't think he prepared it. A year has passed.
If he was voted in, could he decline it at the next meeting and we could pick something?
He could step down for sure. We'd have to replace him. Yeah.
No, he's stuck.
I suggest, I think that's a great suggestion, Kim. Voted in,
yeah, he can change his mind.
Okay, Kim is moving that Jason be re-upped.
I'll second it.
And a second by Rebecca. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And then secretary. Aaron volunteered last time. There was no opposition to her holding that position. We could tell her that she's going to do that as well. All right. Make a motion.
I'll make a motion. Aaron be nominated for a second term as secretary.
Okay. Second? Seconded. Any discussion? Right. Any, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So we have three officers re-upped for another year. So on the sobering center, should we make a agenda item for next meeting to make a decision on that? Is there any discussion on what we want to do with that? Kind of open to any sort of dialogue around that particular question.
I'm just wondering about United Family Center not showing up with that
puts them out of the running, or I don't know if they notified Matt, but they were.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't look good. I mean, I'd probably look to Matt to reach out to them to find out what happened there, but yeah.
And Mr. Chair, there's, I think, still a number of questions that have to be answered. Are we going to do two facilities? Are we doing one facility?
Yeah.
We all in agreement services are, I think there's still a number of questions.
Yeah, I agree. Do you want to have a discussion on that today, or do you want to wait till the next?
It seems like maybe we would want more of the group to be here, particularly maybe the county administrators to perform.
That might be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to say, I feel like waiting every a month before we move to the next, it just seems like a long time.
It does.
Yeah, it doesn't feel very effective to me. So if, could we have an interim meeting or some sort of a Zoom call or something?
Or I was going to suggest too, this is more of a substance use issue. And so we have a substance use subcommittee. So wondering if substance use committee can be, whoever else was thrown in.
Bring back a recommendation.
Yeah.
I know there was discussion previously about needing to know the cost of things before we present them, so they have an idea. So we might need to explore that. What the cost would be before we make a record.
We're just, isn't that what we reviewed last month? And then we.
I think they did send out a budget.
Well, they did. Yes, I apologize. So we, that's part of the information we have already received. And then this was the follow-up interview conversation. Okay, so. One of my questions is there anything more we need from the applicants? Or is this truly just, we need guidance on how to make a recommendation to the commissioners? I understand we have some things that aren't fleshed out, but I don't feel like it's any, there's anything more that we can get from the applicants at this point.
I don't think so. Yeah, I would think it would be more of a, this group talking, getting those fleshed out, making a recommendation.
And if we have, if the subgroup has some additional questions, can we reach out to the applicant in the interim?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I would suggest that. Can I make a motion that the SUD subgroup?
Go for it.
I make a motion that the SUD subgroup evaluates the proposal interview today and will bring forward to the larger group a recommendation.
And so with anybody else also, can we make that?
Yeah, any other people that are interested in participating in that can join that group, yes. Is there a second?
I second.
The move is second. Any discussion? I think one of the conversations that the group should make a recommendation on is holding fast to the one stop versus having other locations. You know, there's sort of a emphasis within this committee. Many members of the committee have made that very explicit. So I think that would be an important conversation to at least address and then bring back to the
Anyway. Are you saying that there's more than whether we should have the one location or that we push forward that there be multiple locations?
Yeah, if the services are, I think in the big picture, my understanding, I'm probably speaking more than the chair should speak anyway, but we've talked about them being co-located if there's multiple providers. So that if there is a one stop for the law enforcement and EMS and whatnot, whereas if it's, okay, this person between 395 and downtown Pasco decided that we're going to take them to sobering recovery.
So to me, it sounds like that's a recommendation that for.
I'm not making a recommendation, I'm saying.
For this group to consider.
Yes.
In their discussions.
Yes.
And I think that's extremely fair. And I think one of the questions that I have for the group to explore too is along those same lines, it's the timeline. If we don't have any concept of how soon we're gonna have any type of facility ready to be, act as a landlord for this group at the Kennebunk facility, are we willing to wait until that happens? Or do we need an interim with the agreement to transition?
Yeah.
I would have maybe one thing now too to think about with the KGH, or the Trios campus. Can that be done in phases? So could that building be separated? And maybe if there is a sobering center, could that be a portion of that building? Pat's been working with the architect, I think, but that might be a good information for the staff group to think about too, as you're thinking about where the services are.
We know that Bowden Construction, the county commissioners are going to vote on the 19th to issue their contract. Notice to proceed will be September 27th. And they've already indicated that they hope to have a phased approach. They recognize that we want a phased approach.
Our presenters, I like, real quick, since we have you here, we don't want to have to ask a question a second time there or seek out for questions. If the committee did in fact decide that the sobering services and the detox services, medical detox services were to be co-located, would Lords be willing to move? I know that you kind of drug your heels in terms of like it would be hard, but would that be something that Lords would be open to? And if you don't have an answer to that, don't answer off the cuff. Go back and talk to whoever you need to and let Joelle know about that.
Well, I'll defer to our CEO, I told him to pick up to be able to present him. But I think we are open to discussion on that for sure.
I apologize, I don't have an immediate answer on that, but definitely something that we can take back and just discuss as a team. Just resources, and if it did get relocated, then how would you best utilize resources?
For sure.
Manpower and expertise. We'll definitely take it back and get an answer back.
Thank you. All right. I think we've reached the public comment section. Any comments from the public? Oh, wait. Randy. There's one more presentation.
Well, I don't have a presentation.
Okay.
Just
conversation.
Yeah, that I've talked to Matt Rasmussen and Gwen Boggan, either one is here. But they agree that for lots of reasons, branding and having a name, even having slogans, in, you know, some recognizable identity to the facility will help with fundraising, help statewide. A lot of people statewide are looking at this project. We here may call it the Recovery Center, but over in Seattle, they're gonna want a name. They're gonna say the whatever center. We know that there will never be enough money. We'll be fundraising till we're dead. And that helps. It helps when you go to Washington DC or Olympia to say, you know, this is our center. I remember when we were doing a campaign to preserve the Hanford Reach, we had the slogan, Save the Reach, and everybody knew it from here to DC. And it was very helpful in, you know, that's who you represent. That's what you're talking about. I'd like to ask if the county could allocate a budget to work with whoever they choose, a local firm, to develop some branding materials.
Is there a voting member that would make a motion to that effect?
I'm a non-voting member, so I can't make that motion.
I think BJ with that. I think we just have to be careful in that we probably can't tell the commissioners.
We can recommend.
We can recommend, yeah, that they consider a budget, but not assign a dollar amount or any of those sort of things to them. So I would make a motion that The advisory committee is recommending that the commissioners locate a firm that can start to work with branding, putting together branding and slogans for the Riverside.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. I think we still have 9 people. So any discussion? Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, I will contact the county representatives and let them know that that's our recommendation. Public comment. Take 2. All right, we have a special event this week.
We do, okay. If you would like to be the proud owner of the future, come to our race this Saturday, 9 a.m., Wade Park in Pasco. You don't have to sign up ahead. You can sign up right there and then. We do have almost 150 runners signed up, runners and walkers. And most of us are too old to run anymore, so we don't expect peak performance, but it's just fun. There'll be a lot of elected officials there, and we as an organization don't have any means of income except donations and fundraisers. So, and we don't take any money. We don't work for pay. We don't receive any money for anything we do. So 100% of what you would donate would be to the cause. Hope you will come. Thank you.
All right.
One quick announcement, just to make sure folks know that Lynx Healthcare has had a facility to provide substance use treatment pain management here in Kennewick, as well as Spokane, and that facility has closed down. So making sure that we are aware there was 2,000 or so patients seeking care there. When we think about our behavioral health complications from folks who no longer have access to pain management and the delays in potential care from other providers, just please keep your ears and eyes open for resources and concerns. So make sure to get that messaging to the right folks if we're starting to experience a crisis. Thank you.
All right, move to adjourn.